there, so. Okay, let's call the meeting to order. Get my. Well, welcome to the Clallam PUD Commission meeting for October the 11th, 2021. Of course, we're still virtual. So, we'll move right into approval of the consent agenda. There are five items on there today.
I don't have any questions.
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second the motion.
Been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda for October the 11th, 2021. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Agenda revisions. Doug, do we have any?
No, Will. None today.
Okay, great. All right, moving on to comments from the public. Sean, do we have comments?
Nothing in chat, but if anybody would like to make a comment at this time, please give me your first name.
John.
Somebody.
Yep, just heard the one, Will. John Martig?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, John.
Well, my concern is easements and access to the easements. I have a piece of property where there was a easement for putting in a power line, either overhead or underground. The contractor wanted it underground, and the contractor came in and put the pole there, or actually trench. And then PUD came, put their power line down. And what I've been left with is a lawn that is has rocks and the grass denuded in areas and not level. And I have a new driveway that I put in last year. And it's filled with compressible gravel, which is good. But I've heard nothing as far as when they're going to pave it, so that is taken care of. And I got rocks as large as my fist, and where I had a lawn before that I've maintained for the past 18 plus years. And I'm concerned that they haven't really returned the property to close to what it was before they opened up the easement.
John, have you brought this to a customer service representative or anybody at the PUD?
Yes, I have. I've spoken with Colin Young, and he was going to get back with the contractor, but I tried getting a hold of him today, and he wasn't available. And this started in August 24.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your comments. We'll get somebody to contact you.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, John. Anybody else, Sean?
I heard no others, Will.
Okay. Moving on to business items. Our first item here is the Resolution 2215-21. Authorizing the disposal of surplus property. Charlie, are you on?
Yes, sir. You hear me?
Harry, I see you there.
All right. This is just one of the necessary evils we have to go through as far as the RCWs recommend. We do this to the board, so we do have a generator, 22 kW, 12240 volt propane operated generator, which is removed from our SWIM fiber hut due to constant issues with the fuel system. The estimated value of this item is about $3,000. This system was replaced with a newer generator, so we have no more use for this right now at the present time, and probably not in the future as well. So we'd like to go ahead and have it surplus and try to regain some of this value.
So I see this thing was installed in 2010, so it's quite old, huh?
Yes, sir. I think we'll get a decent amount for it on our website, but it does need mechanical repairs, so we'll make sure that that's known and what exactly it needs.
Okay, any comments, discussion?
None from me.
No. Do we have a motion?
I move that we accept resolution 2215-21 authorizing the disposal of surplus property.
Jim, you're on mute.
Jim, you may be muted.
Yeah, sorry. I had a cat in the background making some noise. Yeah, I second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval of resolution 2215-21, authorizing the disposal of surplus property consisting of a 22KW120/240 volt propane operated generator, which was removed from the Squim fiber hut due to constant fuel problems. The estimated value of this item is $3,000. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is resolution 2216-21, amending the Carlsberg water system service area boundary. Travis?
Hey, guys.
Hey, there he is.
I'm here. I'm here to request that you consider approving the resolution for the boundary adjustment in Carlsberg. This is kind of similar to the boundary amendment resolution that was passed in June of this year, albeit maybe with a little bit of a twist. In Carlsberg, which you can maybe see on the maps that were attached in the board packet, we identified both a service area and a retail service area. The service area, I guess you kind of liken to a service territory. It's an area that the Department of Health has approved that we can provide water service. The retail service area is comprised of the original, you know, lots that participated in the LUD formations. The retail service area is an area that we are actively providing service, or we are more or less compelled to provide service. DOH allows that distinction between those two types of service area. What we're kind of seeking to do here is expand just the service area so that we can include a couple of parcels into the southwest corner of the existing boundary. These lots are outside the current service area. As it is now, they would not have access to community water. By expanding just the service area, we can sort of get pre-approval from DOH to serve these areas, but we can wait until these lot owners are able to provide additional water rights to the districts before we extend the retail service area to them. So it's kind of similar to the situation we have with the UGA further to the north in that water system, where we have an area that is within the service area that we're not yet serving. And you know, we're working with the county to secure water rights from the Department of Ecology to be able to extend service to the whole UGA and kind of complete service in that service area. But at this time, we are not. This is kind of similar to that, but on a much smaller scale. So I guess you could call it kind of grease in the wheels for future service to some of these properties, but we can still require an increase to the district's water rights and, you know, paying it to the district's capital facilities before we would actually extend service to these new lots.
So we have water rights in hand, the new wells to serve this area without impacting the existing LUD. Is that right?
I would say that what we're doing is we're extending the service area, but not considering serving these lots until they are able to provide us with additional water rights so that we don't have to take away from the existing water rights pool. This expansion area would not it would not be an area that the district is compelled to offer service. It's more or less just an area that the DOH would allow us to serve in the future. The district's policy of kind of waiting until we have additional water rights prior to expanding our retail service area would not change. We would still require an increase in water rights or some sort of a analysis to confirm we have enough water rights prior to actually providing service to these ponds.
So the issue in the past was we had water rights for a full build-out in the LUD, and I know we were getting pushed at one time to use those. That's not the case here, is that right?
Yeah, outside the UGA is kind of a separate instance. What we have here is we have lot owners who either have had attempts to drill wells or have not been successful, or we've had lot owners in that area who've had wells that have that are no longer viable. And so what we're looking at doing is kind of creating a process whereby these property owners could go to the mitigation bank, purchase mitigation, and then transfer that mitigation to the district to increase our water rights, and then we could turn and serve these customers.
Travis, so in this case, I understand that these few customers are actually bringing us their water rights. It's completely separate from what we're doing. So we'll get their water rights, Will.
Okay. And this is all under WARA 18, 160-gallon usage per day and so on. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's the case. So since they're in this area, they are, you know, they can go to the water bank to apply for mitigation, just like they were going to put in a well. You know, if they were going to put in their own well within the Dungeness Water Rule area, they would go to the mitigation bank, they would purchase a mitigation certificate that would allow them to put a well in, and they would have their own, you know, on-site water source. We're kind of hoping to modify that process a little bit and still have them go to the water bank to get the mitigation certificate, but actually have it applied to our, you know, existing water source so we can get an increase in water right, you know, prior to bringing them online.
So what is the water bank charging for this these days?
Of mitigation certificate for an indoor package from the water bank is $4,000, if I recall correctly.
And so since they're going to move that over to the PUD, who's paying that, the homeowner?
Yeah, so basically the homeowner would have to purchase the mitigation certificate, or if they had a well on site, they could decommission to transfer their existing well water rights to us. We would allow that as well, but yeah, they would purchase a mitigation certificate from the water bank, and then those costs would basically be paid out of pocket by the customer prior to us bringing them into the retail service area. So we would be sticking with sort of the district's ongoing policy of, you know, growth pays for growth, and that the existing ratepayers or the, you know, system pioneers would not be expected to bear the cost of bringing additional customers into the water system.
And it brings to mind that old thing about waters for fighting over and whiskeys for drinking. any questions, discussion on this one?
Yeah, I have something there, Will. Travis, does this help us, this revision in the process, make it a little easier? And I know there's no such thing as easy when it comes to this stuff, but make it a little easier for some of these folks that have got these small legacy systems, Class B, smaller kind of stuff, that they're sort of aging out and they can't take care of their systems, and allow them, you know, to enter into a process for us where we can review and work with them possibly to provide their water for them?
Yes, possibly. I mean, this particular area that's identified on the map does not include any existing Group B system. But that's sort of I guess you might call this, I don't want to say a test, but sort of an initial an initial service area expansion, and we're probably going to have more that are very similar, either in this system or other systems, as water becomes a little bit more of a hot button topic. We're hoping to sort of establish an internal, you know, workflow to be able to expand the service area, get it approved by DOH. Then once the water rights have either been transferred to the district or acquired for the district, you know, rolling out the retail service area to include that. So, yes, I would say going forward, we're probably going to see a lot of similar resolutions where we kind of have small service area additions or enlargements to our service area around the exterior boundary as we kind of identify areas where folks are going to be seeking water and are going to be able to provide some kind of a water right for us to be able to take them on.
Okay, thanks.
Travis, I want to make sure, I think you said this, but I, like I said, want to clarify. There would be no degradation of service either of water or staff for our existing water customers?
That's correct. So we're going to have, we would be looking at having these customers coming in, bring water rights with them. Prior to them actually getting connected, they'd have to pay a capital facility fee, which goes into our, you know, capital improvement fund for expansion of, you know, storage capacity and reservoir capacity and pumping capacity. So they're kind of buying into the system, so to speak, when they pay that fee. They're paying towards the system as it exists now, plus they're paying for upgrades to the system. And then from that point on, once they're connected, they would be a rate payer, so they would be actively contributing to the rates that, you know, go into maintaining and operating the system. So from that point of view, you know, they're going to be paying their own way, I guess, from the beginning and then throughout their you know, term as a rate payer.
Are those lots in the UGA, the proposed UGA?
These are not. This is outside the UGA. This is down at the kind of the southwest extent of the water system near Frost Road and Asbury Road. So this is kind of a, like I said, a separate issue from the UGA in terms of our expansion at some point into water service for the whole UGA. Tom Martin could probably provide you with, you know, better details on where we're at with that currently. But as it sits now, this expansion is pretty small. This is kind of five lots near the existing boundary.
Yeah, I guess the board probably needs to hear an update of that whole issue. I know we've talked about it before, but last time, but we don't have to do it now, but at some point we need to probably get updated on it.
Yeah, I just want to mention a couple things here. I don't want to get into a lot of the detail, but, you know, this is very similar to what we're trying to do with the new Carlsberg well, and to serve the rest of the urban growth area outside of our existing service area. So, you know, there's one more step that to getting the water rights for these four, you know, these small lots out off of Atterbury Road that Travis is talking about. Once we get the mitigation certificates from these folks, we have to turn around and say, okay, Ecology, give us a water right. We have the mitigation certificates here, you know, mitigated, but we still have to apply to them, and they have to approve it. And they don't approve our expansion policy. And that's a major point that they're bringing up with our mitigation plan for the new well that we drilled to serve the UGA. So they say they're raising a public interest argument. And we feel that we are in the public interest, but we need to go through public process to demonstrate that. And one of the public processes that both the county and the district have to go through is to amend our plans for Carlsberg to, you know, to redraw the map, to, like Travis said, that the whole retail service area covers the whole UGA. And, according to our water rights attorney, this would give us a lot of leverage in this whole public interest argument that Ecology has been raising. So we can show unity with the county, and they go through public hearings to update their comprehensive plan, and we go through public hearings to update our water system plan to redraw our maps. You know, I think we're in a very good position to demonstrate solid public interest behind us.
So what is their position, that our water right based on full build-out in the LUD is excessive and we could use some of that? Is that what's...
That's one of their points. The other point is they go back to the original intent of the water right, which was, you know, back in 1992. The original service area covered a 15 square mile around Carlsberg. And so we were planning on using that water right to serve a much larger area. You know, it even goes out to some sections that touch the shoreline of the stream. That doesn't make any sense in today's world because we formed an urban growth area and, you know, 10 years after we got our water right. And now all the growth is meant to occur there, and that's where the water should go to serve that growth. So we don't think ecology's interpretation of public interest, you know, with regards to this really large service area in the original tent, you know, has any meaning anymore. So we're up against that with them right now. And we're trying to meet with them, and they have not been wanting to meet with us. And during the Wahpeta workshop, I had a chance to have a discussion, you know, virtually online during one of the meetings with Mary Verner, who's the Director of Water Resources for Ecology. And I said, hey, look, we're not getting anywhere with your Southwest region people on this water right. And she said, oh, that's not even on my radar. What's Carlsberg? Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to personally attend the next meeting. So that's gotten the attention of all sorts of county commissioners, Mary Ellen Winborn, the Director of Community Development, who's very interested in developing affordable housing in Carlsberg, and also she's getting the attention of our state reps, Farragut. So I think joint meetings with the county and the district are in our near future.
Yeah. Well,
I want to make sure I understood. When they turn the water rights over to us, you're saying that there still may be some uncertainty about us getting the rights to that water. And if that's the case, then I want to make sure that we don't accept new customers until we have squared away that we're actually going to get the water rights that they're giving to us.
Well, that's going to be difficult to assure at this point in time because of the way the position that ecology is taking. I think we're, you know, 80% there once we get the mitigation certificates in hand. You know, there are four customers out there four lots that Travis was referring to that, you know, we've said, okay, this is how you do it. You get your mitigation certificates first and we turn around and get a water rate from that. And I think Travis has been clear about that with the customers, but, you know, the timing on this is, you know, very uncertain. And I would like to serve these four lots, you know, once they get their mitigation certificate. But I guess that's, you know, if we're going to stick real hard to our policy and not make any exceptions, then we're going to have to ask them to leave.
Well, Tom, why don't we schedule to give an update to the commissioners on all of this at some future meeting then?
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry if I got too deep into this.
No, that's okay.
Q&A session here. But, yeah.
Questions.
Yeah, I would appreciate that because it's been, a year and a half since we've really discussed this Carlsberg water issue and stuff at one of these meetings.
Right.
Yeah, and it sounds like the typical thing is happening where thing always changes. Okay, so we'll get that on as an action item and do that at a future meeting.
So I would just like to make a distinction, if I could. This service area amendment would not enlarge the retail service area. I think your concern, Rick, was extending service to folks prior to receiving the water rights. We can still require the water rights transfer to be complete before we serve these parcels. All we're doing is identifying a more or less of a future service area. So it does not, you know, compel us to offer service prior to the water rights arriving. It just allows us to skip a step with Department of Health. Once we are able to get the water rights hammered out, we don't have to go back Department of Health again and have them evaluate whether or not this is an area we could provide service.
Thank you for the clarification, Travis. Yes, my concern is I don't want to potentially negatively affect our current customers by expanding until we're sure that they're bringing water with them.
Sure. So that's actually the reason we're doing it in this fashion is the Department of Health will allow us to identify, you know, potential areas as a service area without necessarily changing our retail service boundary, which would require us to provide service there. So this is hopefully sort of going to be the template for how we're going to be able to do some of these expansions in the future, where we can expand just the retail service area, which like I said, does not, you know, compel us to provide service in that area. And those can remain as future service areas until the water rights are complete. And then at that point in time, we can go ahead and extend service to them.
Thanks again. And make sure that the customer know that it's that just because we potentially amend the service area, that does not necessarily mean that they will get service.
Sure, yeah, we're pretty clear in our communications up front with the customer that's sort of a requirement. You know, the goal here, I think, is just to sort of take one less step out of the equation so that we can kind of focus on that water rights aspect of getting a new customer in without having to also, you know, be submitting things to the Department of Health at the same time.
And I guess I would add to that let's make sure that the pioneers and the LUD know we're still protecting their interests.
Okay. We'll do some outreach.
Okay.
I guess there is an action here on the board's part.
I think just the update on the overall Carlsberg situation was the action.
Was there a resolution?
Yeah, there was a resolution.
Okay.
So that's resolution 2216-21. Do I have a motion on that one?
I move that we adopt resolution 2216-21, amending the Carlsberg Water System Service Area Boundary.
I'll second that, and I may note that the pre-agenda has an incorrect title.
I saw that too.
We want to fix that. I don't know.
I think they're trying to confuse me. Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 2216-21, amending the Carlsberg Water System Service Area to allow for future expansion once sufficient water rights have been secured and the expansion area is approved by the Washington State Department of Health. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Travis. Okay, our next item is a presentation of the budget proposal for 2022 with Sean and Ruth. This is the initial kickoff of our budget process, so go ahead, Sean.
You guys all see my screen, the big slide?
Yes, see, I can see it.
Okay. All right, so real quick, before we get into the budget, I just wanted to offer a quick update on our bond defeasance and the new issuance. We were supposed to have our Moody's call last Thursday, and we decided to put that on hold due to some market volatility last week. When we initially started this process and began informing you of our plans, we were looking at a net present value savings of about $1.8 million, and it's been eroded down to about $1.1 million now. And since there's some risk involved in the timing between when the defeasance occurs and the new issuance occurs, I consulted with our underwriter, and basically we all agreed to postpone a few weeks just to kind of watch the market play out. And as you, I'm sure you all know, one of the biggest issues has been the sort of this game of chicken that's been played with the debt ceiling for our country, and it's caused bond yields to fluctuate substantially. So we've sort of postponed our Moody's call to the end of the month, hoping that things will settle down a little bit and we'll be able to proceed forward at that time. And if we do have a high level of confidence that we'll achieve at least $1 million in savings. We do plan to proceed forward. But having said that, since we've sort of taken a backseat on this and kind of a wait-and-see approach, none of the budget numbers that Ruth and I will present today will include any defeasance or new bond issuance, just in case it doesn't come to fruition. So that's just my little caveat there.
So do we need to set some level of savings before we go ahead with this, or what do you think?
Well, there's just – the problem is there's this 15-day window between when the defeasance occurs and before we can issue the new bonds. And that's our risk window. And so we don't know what's going to happen in between those 2 weeks. And the previous 2 weeks, I had our underwriter run the most up-to-date analysis for us last Friday. And, you know, in a two-week time frame, it dropped about – $200,000 in savings. So his thought is, let's wait till the end of the month, kind of see if things settle down after this debt ceiling issue has been resolved, and the bond market should respond appropriately is kind of what his thought is. But
yeah.
I was sort of setting a threshold of $1 million is kind of where we set the go, no-go threshold.
Okay, so that's the choke point. Yeah, things are so volatile now. You never know what you're going to get. So,
right. So with that, if there's no other questions on that particular topic here, I'll jump into our 2022 budget proposal here. And as Will said, Ruth and myself are going to go through the slides just like we did last year. I think that we have roughly 50 this time around, and we'll try to get through them as quick as possible. But if at any point anybody has any questions, please feel free to stop and make it interactive along the way. So I threw this slide in here sort of for Rick's benefit. I don't believe that Rick was part of the October budget presentation last year, but sort of this is kind of the flow of how we do our budget process here at the district. So in June of each year, managers and supervisors are given a template of their O&M budget and tasked to complete that for the next year. And at that time, they're also tasked with completing whatever their capital needs might be for the upcoming year. So while the managers and supervisors are doing that, finance with Ruth and I, we at that point start working on the personnel, which is all the salaries and benefits. And Ruth and I will go through and input all of the personnel into the budget. And as we slowly get budgets back from managers over the couple-month period that we allot, we compile a full budget, and then we sit down with each of the department managers and go through their line items and compile it into sort of this form that you're going to see today. And when we do that, we look at impacts to reserves and what potential rate adjustments might need to be made at that time. And it's all compiled in this presentation here in this work session. And then we make a few tweaks between now and the end of the year, and then we'll bring a formal budget for your adoption at the end of the year. And I believe, Rick, you were on board in December last year when we updated the 2021 budget. So that's sort of the process of what we go through each year. It's a lot of work between June and this point here. So I'd like to personally thank Ruth. She did an amazing job this year compiling everything and is mostly responsible for the slide deck that you see here today. So with that, when we're putting the budget together, we have to keep objectives and challenges in mind. And on the objective side, we've tried to follow our strategic plan to the best of our ability. And one of our strategic initiatives is to provide stable rates. Now, some years ago, we used to coincide our rate increases with BPA, and so they have every two-year rate increases, and so we would have, you know, sometimes a 7 or 8% rate increase all at once in October, which was kind of a double whammy for customers. You're going into a cold month, and so the bills are already going up, and then you, on top of that, you compound it with a rate increase. So we've changed our strategic plan and moved forward by having the rate increases in April as we're coming out of those colder months, and then also looking for more of inflationary increases year over year to kind of level things out and not have such dramatic rate shock, if you will. We also want to make sure that we're being financially responsible. And then when we're looking at capital, system reliability is sort of at the core of what we're looking to do. We want to make sure that our projects have a favorable return on investment and that we're strategically assessing our capital needs every year. And then, of course, we want to maintain healthy fiscal targets and follow our financial policy that we have in place. Now, on the other side, you know, what are the challenges to sort of putting together and meeting these objectives? And the first is really our kilowatt hour sales on a per customer basis have really been declining. As you can see here, it's been declining about 3% 2014 through 2019, and then it's been relatively flat since COVID happened. But overall, it's been about a 9% reduction per customer since 2014. And then weather, that's always a challenge. You know, where we live, we get a lot of storms, a lot of down trees into our lines, and that increases costs. On the increasing costs bubble here, inflation is kind of an unknown right now. Insurance, I'll talk about this in a minute, but we're getting hit with some higher premiums this coming year. The pandemic with the governor's moratorium has really increased our write-offs. We're optimistic that we'll be getting enough money in assistance to help offset that, but still we're going to have some. And then our personnel costs, just like with anything, it's going up. The Family Medical Leave Act that went into place in Washington State, this new long-term care tax, and then, of course, health care costs in general continue to increase every year. And capital, it's always a big expense. We got to make sure that we're doing the right improvements and replacements to the system. And then regulation from the legislature, CETA is a big thing that we're planning for. And then also we've been hit with some unexpected costs from the DOT, making us do some culvert replacements, which requires us to relocate electric and water facilities to meet those requirements.
When back on your objectives, a lot of people, when they see ROI, they're thinking profit. That's a cost-benefit analysis, improve reliability and reduce cost. There's no profit involved.
Right. Yeah, I should have clarified that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so on the next couple slides here, just some assumptions when we're preparing the budget. We have to work off of assumptions to make sure that our forecast model is the best that it possibly can be. So on the year-end assumptions for revenue, we're basing it on our BPA load forecast, and our interest income and late fee income have gone to basically zero. The LGIP right now is hovering at about one-tenth of 1% for the investments with the Washington State. It's almost zero. On expenses, we base everything off of our existing personnel count and an average for O&M costs year to date. We did factor in some write-offs related to COVID. As far as BPA is concerned, our power procurement is over budget by about 0.46% this year. And then, of course, regulatory issues with I-937 and CETA, we've taken those into consideration. And then for year-end, our capital is based solely on staff projections for what they believe that they will spend from now through the end of the year. So that all kind of give us a baseline for where we start before we input the 2022 figures. And then when we do start working on 22, we have to also make some general assumptions here. And those are our BPA forecast is going to be based off the 2021 rate impact model that came out in July. And also 0.75% customer meter growth for next year, which has been pretty standard for the last decade. And then we've also factored in 0% kilowatt hour growth for next year. Our conservation expenses were identified earlier this summer in a CPA presentation that was given to the board. And then our mandatory Washington PERS contribution is set at 10.25. And then this was sort of the big one that I just learned about. I was on a conference call with our insurance carrier a week before last. And he said, be prepared for large premium increases this coming year. And he said for cyber, they've been told a 214% increase for half the coverage. And apparently the insurance companies that have been offering this coverage are in the red. They've been having more claims than premiums, and it's just something that is becoming prevalent right now with a lot of payouts. And the other one was our excess liability coverage. They've had substantial claims from wildfires, and so they said to expect about a 50%.
I think we lost Sean.
Yeah, we lost you, Sean. You've frozen.
Well, those rate increases make me want to freeze as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all in shock.
I will go over to Sean's office and
yeah,
see what's
you,
going
if you
on.
Would.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
He looks like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, he looks like he's in shock.
Hold on, my Zoom is rebooting.
Okay. Sean will be back. He thought he was still moving on, so he's trying to get back on again.
Okay. Doug, while we're waiting, the loss of load in the 3 to 9% that Sean referred to, maybe the next meeting we could talk about that a little bit. About what's causing that or what we think is causing it, and do we think it's going to continue?
Yeah, we can do that. That's, maybe Sean can even address that now if you want.
Can you guys hear me now?
Pretty
yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry about that. My Zoom just crashed and rebooted, so I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah, Sean, do you want to – Rick had asked a question about the loss of 3%, 9%. You want to give him a quick answer on those with the public and the load?
Yeah, actually, can I defer to John on that? He's the one that had that analysis handy that he just did.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. The significant load loss we saw between 2013-14 and 2019 was pretty dramatic. Now, when we had COVID, that kind of upset the analysis. Right now, we believe that the decline in total kilowatt hours has ceased, and we're probably expecting close to 0% growth for the next several years. So it's no longer declining overall. On a customer basis, it still continues to decline. But with the three-quarters customer meter addition, now makes up for what was a declining kilowatt hour growth. Some of that increase may be electric vehicles. We did take a look and saw probably more electric vehicles in our service territory than one might expect. And we are also coming the conservation potential is dramatically lower now. So right now we're pretty flat toward growth, which is a change from the declining growth.
Thank you, John.
So you've got an increase in meters, but you've got a 0 kilowatt-hour growth. Is that conservation or?
Generally, that is a continued conservation and efficiencies.
Yeah.
It's pretty gradual. So on a per-customer basis, we are still expecting to see a three-quarter percent decline. But overall, the growth is pretty stable, it looks like, at least over this year and the last half of 2020.
Thank you.
So I'm not sure where did I get cut off here.
On page 6, I think, Sean.
Okay. Did you hear me talk about the insurance increases?
Just as you were talking about cyber insurance, you got hit with a cyber attack.
Yeah. We thought you went into shock with those big increases.
Yeah. So the last couple of things on here, our CBA increase is set for May of next year, and then we're obviously operating under the assumption that the approved rate increases for electric and water and wastewater go into effect on their respective dates here, and that we also follow our financial policy. So our last page of assumptions here, the CDO Decarbonization Fund, we had talked about using that fund for the bond defeasance, but as I stated earlier, we're sort of putting that on the back burner. But we plan to continue to rate fund that fund at $575,000 per year until we build up the reserves for that potential battery project. On the low-income side, this was the first year that we had to meet a CETA obligation, and the first one was in July 31st. We had to have a new low-income program put into place, which required us to eliminate the existing discount program. And it's up and running now, and it's a successful program. It's working very well in partnership with OLECAP. And we also, at the same time, implemented the line item assessment on the bill of $1.04 for the non-exempt customers. And our projected funding for next year for this program is about $367,000. And that money will go to OLECAP in September because they would like to run our program and LIHEAP concurrently, which is October 1st through September 30th of each year. Okay, so with that, I'll jump into the electric system here. And the first piece here is revenue and expense overview. So on the sales side, we're a little bit higher next year, and that's primarily due to the meter growth, 0.75% that John talked about, and the rate increase. Our other is down just slightly. Interest is, like I said, almost non-existent because of rates. On FEMA, we are going to get a reimbursement next year. There's a little bit of COVID related reimbursement for some PPE materials that we'll get, and also some from a storm that was qualifying either at the beginning of this year or last year. And then our customer contributions, this current year, 2021, has been much higher than historical. I see that sort of slowing down next year, primarily due to inflation and some supply chain issues. Typically, we see about $850,000 per year, and next year we're projecting about $900,000. And again, no debt financing or additional monies from the Rural Economic Development Fund. So this year we're projecting to end with revenues about $73.5 million, and next year about $72.4 million. On the expense side, conservation is up a little bit. Typically, as we go into a new biennium for conservation, we're more aggressive that first year to make sure that we hit our targets. Purchase resources, it's down a little bit based on the BPA rate decrease and the rate impact model. Labor, O&M, and taxes and debt, all primarily about the same as this year. The big difference is that line item on capital. We're going from 9.2 to 8.1. And the primary difference there is in 21, we had some residual carryover on the Forks Operations Center. And in 22, we're not budgeting for any facilities that we're building. So overall here, this is a budget comparison by department. And so that percent change over here on the right is comparing 22 budget to the 21 budget. And so I'll just kind of highlight a couple of these here. Accounting increase is due to some additional consulting with Milliman and Moss Adams. And we also have a few employees in that department that are taking advantage of the district's tuition reimbursement program. So we're putting that into the budget for next year. Auto shop, the increase here is transitory. We have a retirement that's coming up in that department. And so we've hired another mechanic for some training and some overlap before that person departs the district. Broadband, that's a substantial percent increase, but it's all due to capital. And Ruth will go over the capital slides here in just a minute. And on the distribution side, again, capital-related increases there. The general counsel, that 21%, that's all pretty much the insurance premium increases for wildfire and cyber. Human resources, it's pretty much COVID-related due to procurement of tests for employees. Information technology, they're adding a fire suppression system to our server room here in the main office. Records, just some consulting and maintenance increases. Safety was an increase in some training expense. And then that big decrease on transmission, again, capital related. They're just not doing as much capital on the transmission side. It's more been shifted to distribution for next year. So overall, our budget is increasing by about 1.45% on the total electric side. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ruth here to walk you through.
I have a question. Just out of curiosity, I see that the general manager went up, and I would have thought that intuitively that might have gone down for next year.
Yeah, so there's a retention payout on the general manager budget for next year, as well as a PTO payout on that too, Rick.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Sean, just to add, legal went up a little bit as well.
Oh, right. Okay. Yep. On the general manager, yeah.
You know, on the broadband, there's supposedly a lot of funds available out there. Are you counting those in those numbers, or are you assuming we're going to get some of that?
We have applied for quite a few different grants. I know that Sean Del Plain is also working with NOAANet on getting some of those funds. We haven't been successful, to my knowledge, up to this point. And I think one of the big things for Sean is he actually put in an order recently for some fiber, and we were told it was going to be over a year just to get the fiber. So I think part of the problem is supply chain issues, and there's no real shovel-ready projects because nobody can procure the materials. But,
well,
yes, we are.
The cost of the fiber went up, too. The cost of the fiber doubled. So just because of the high demand for cable.
So with that, Ruth, I'll turn it over to you to go through the capital piece.
Okay, great. Thanks, Sean. Good afternoon, everyone. Like Sean said, I'll be going over the capital and also the debt for all three divisions. And I should start out mentioning that the capital costs do not include our internal labor. It's just material and contractual services or direct purchase. We have a great visual showing the amount of capital spend by category for 22. The four largest categories, making up 78% of our planned capital, are procurement of AMI meters, transformers, and regulars. You'll see that in the upper left yellow. Next, we have transmission projects in the green. Then we have distribution projects in the blue, and then below that, the other yellow is vehicles and equipment procurement. Starting with transmission, these are the planned projects for 22, and I'll just go over the highlights of the more notable non-regular items. First, we have the phase two of the transmission rebuild between the airport substation and BPA substation. We'll be replacing transmission poles and upgrading the distribution underbuild. Phase one of that project was between airport substation and Cherry Street transmission line. And phase two will be the Cherry Street transmission line to BPA substation. Next up, we have the Forks rebuild. And this project involves replacing all the 40-year-old equipment at the Fort substation. Most of those materials were procured in 21, and 22 is just the remaining work on that. Next up, we have phase two of the Gunstone transmission rebuild. And for those that don't know, Gunstone is a privately owned timber company that we have an easement through for our transmission. And we'll be replacing 30 poles. Most of those materials were procured in 21. Next, we have phase two of the transmission rebuild between Sappho and Forks, and we'll be replacing 19 old transmission poles. Next, we have the Nia Bay transformer replacement. We're replacing a 45-year-old 7.5 MVA substation transformer. Next, we'll be installing transmission switches and two circuit switchers outside the BTA substation. And that will, it's new equipment that will tie the transmission line west and east of the BTA substation. Lastly, we have various substation renewal projects totaling $109,000. On to distribution. First up, we have the Fish Passage projects. These are the WASDOT culvert replacements. The work involved here is moving our power. Some of it's temporary, some of it's permanent, and that's to accommodate the new culverts. One of those projects is carryover, and nine are new to the budget. Next, we have cable replacements. We'll be replacing Staling direct buried PE cable with EPR cable. Next, we have Camp Hayden, the three-phase upgrade. This is out in Joyce, and this project is for improving the voltage. Next, we have the Cedar Street Alley reconductor. This is in Flynn, and we'll be upgrading 2,000 feet of three-phase overhead conductor from number 6 copper to number 2 ACSR. And in layman terms, basically we're putting in stronger line material that can carry more load. And we're also replacing up to 14 poles. Next, we have the Clark Road reconductor, also in SWIM. We are upgrading 3,000 feet of V-phase overhead conductor and 1,600 feet of one-phase conductor from number 4 ACSR to number 2 ACSR. And again, that is a bigger, stronger line. And we'll also be replacing up to 16 poles. Next, we'll be installing conservation voltage reduction metering and communications at our Monroe substation. This allows us to provide minimum voltage so that we're not providing more than we need to. Next, we'll be upgrading existing and extending new three-phase 556 AAC conductor on the north end of Evans Road to tie into Squim Dungeness Way. Lastly, we have the Lake Sutherland project. So on the north side of the lake, we'll be extending three-phase and converting from overhead to underground to address low voltage. Lastly, we have the rest of electric capital. This includes regularly budgeted items and some new, and I'll go over some of the newer stuff. We have a number of vehicles we'll be replacing, 10 of those, and we have two new vehicles that we'll be procuring. We're getting a work truck for the Niger shop, and we're also getting a 100-foot bucket truck for Forks. Broadband, we have a number of projects. First, we have the Lake Dawn fiber build from Lordson Boulevard. This project is to address some of the rural broadband needs, and the district is applying for ARPA funds and pursuing homeowner association funding to help offset those costs. We're also replacing Fiber's OTDR. That stands for Optical Time Divisional Reflectometer. Thank you, Sean, for explaining that. This measures the reflections of light to say how far away a fiber event or break is. Fiber or broadband also needs to repair its fiber trailer. This is a trailer we've owned since 2002, and there are some soft spots in the floor. Lastly, we have Silverado SCADA. The goal of this project is to mostly complete our SCADA network, and Silverado is the last substation to connect. So we are going to try to secure a grant, and if we're able to do that, we'll build fiber out to Forks, and if we're unable to secure a grant, we'll be pursuing a wireless option. Next, we have the Forks Ops pole yard. This is basically a structure for storing poles. It involves sinking some power poles into the ground, either laying gravel or pavement. For IT, a bigger ticket item is to replace the building sprinklers that are over the server room equipment. Next, let's see, the central warehousing facility is having some roof issues, but we're trying to avoid replacing the roof as those roof materials are still in pretty good condition. So instead, they're looking at having the skylights, which are leaking, and the gutters and drain systems reconditioned. And Charlie's going to be getting quotes on that work around the first of the year. And lastly, we have the ERP disaster supplies, our emergency response plan supplies, and hopefully this is the last year for those. Okay, on to debt.
Can I ask a question? That sprinkler system in a server room sounds like a... Are you going to damage all those servers? And I think in some computer installations, they use Haline for fire suppression.
We're going to, with the leaks that we've had over the last couple of years in other parts of the building, we felt it was prudent to take the sprinklers out from over the top of the servers and the batteries. So we're looking at putting in a CO2 system.
Ah, okay. All right, good. Thank you.
Hey, Bruce.
Yes.
A quick little question on your, you said $24,000 for, I think it was street lights. Is that any particular area or just sort of miscellaneous all over the place?
You know, I'm going to let John speak to that if he's available. I'm not sure what area that LED light project is for.
Yeah, the street lights in general, we have to consider as capital any replacement of a street light fixture. So this would include some of the LED conversions that we're gradually making throughout our service territory.
Are any of these focused on Nia Bay?
Yes. Any street light that is part of our system would be included, including those that we have in Nia Bay.
Because you remember we had a complaint from them about a year and a half or 2 years ago now about their street lights. Okay, thanks.
Okay, so here we have electric debt. The table at the top shows our 2022 debt payments, broken down by principal and interest, with a total of 3.7 for the year. And then the graph below that shows all our debt service payments through term for electric debt. And currently, we have $31.5 million outstanding. And like Sean mentioned, the only change with electric debt is the potential defeasance of the 2014 bonds, and that's the lime green. And if we do a new bond issue to capture a better rate and reduce our interest costs. And I think we're back to you, Sean.
Perfect. Thanks, Ruth.
Yeah.
Okay, so... some personnel highlights here for next year. So first, some position changes. We have two operations assistants that we're going to transition to what's called an operations assistant special purpose, and then one to an apprentice lineman. A meter helper will be going into a meter apprenticeship. and we are moving one of our operations superintendents to an operations manager, which is a setup that we had formerly here at the district about four years ago, and we're reverting back to that makeup. And then we've also been told that we'll have some high-level retirements next year. Not exactly sure on dates yet, but we do know that there will be some retirements coming. Some position additions. We only have one full-time addition, and that's the equipment bore operator. And my understanding is that this position will basically effectively free up one of the line crews to focus more on daily projects and enhance our productivity. And then the other three that are listed here, the ops assistant, the mechanic, and the engineering tech, those are all transitory in nature and solely being added due to pending retirements. Other highlights for personnel, we do have a planned reduction in the meter reader department in October of next year. And this has been in the plan for quite a few years now. And it's solely due to the fact that we're deploying more AMI meters this next year. We were talking about some facility helper positions. We've actually decided to postpone that, and we're using more of our pool flagger population right now for some of these tasks. Next year in January, the long-term care tax goes into effect on January 1st, and that's 0.58% of all wages. The staff 457 match, we have budgeted that from a 2% in 2021 to a 3% in 22. And then the CBA wage increases are automatically go into effect on May 1st of next year, and that's 3% across the board for all collective bargaining employees. And so the summary on electric. So here is the same information that we presented on the slides earlier with our revenue at $72 million, and then the expenses at $72.1 million. So our net change in operating reserves next year is about $289,000. However, when we were putting this presentation together, Ruth and I were informed there might be another project that needs to get put into the budget for next year for another transformer, and it would be about $200,000. So if that gets added, we'll basically be at about a break-even for next year. But based on the information we had when we put the budget together, we're looking at finishing next year at about $22.9 million in reserves. And if you carry that over to the next slide here, this shows our 10-year projection, which is based on engineering and operations 10-year capital plan. And as you can see, we are maintaining inflationary increases for the next 10 years and keeping our days cash on hand relatively stable, anywhere between 140 and 157 days. One thing to note, we are planning to do all near term, so the next 10 years, capital projects financed through rates. So this will help keep our debt service down, and also we're working towards CETA compliance every year with that $575,000 transfer to that fund. I guess the one caveat here is that these numbers are based on assumptions, and, you know, like with any assumption, probably will change over the next 10 years. But you can see in the bottom, it's based on BPA rate increases of 5.5% every 2 years. Granted, they did better this year. But historically, it's, you know, 5.5% has been more accurate in the norm. Increasing kilowatt hours at 0, meter growth at 3.25%, and then labor inflation and material inflation at 4% and 3% respectively. And, you know, depending on what happens next year, that material number at 3% might be a little bit underestimated. But regardless, it's looking pretty good for the next 10 years to potentially keep our proposed rate increase is under 3%.
Hey, Sean, this is John. Do you want to mention that you did increase the labor and material inflation since the last time we had a budget presentation? I think they went up a little bit.
Yeah, in the previous presentation, I can't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but I believe that material inflation was around 2% and labor was around 3.6. So yeah, I did increase these a little bit for this presentation.
Sean, can you remind me how you do calculate the debt coverage ratio or how that's worked up?
Yeah, so basically you take our net income and how many times that net income will allow you to pay your debt service.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So if your debt service is $1 million, our net income in this year here would be $3.4 million.
Okay.
And just for reference, our bond covenants, to not be considered in default, we need to maintain 1.25 times, and we've always strived to stay above 2 as sort of our limit, our threshold. So we're definitely meeting our bond covenants with these projections. And then on the final slide here for electric, the board already approved the rate increase for next year at 2.25%. And so the impact to an average residential customer who consumes 1250 kilowatt hours per month will be about $3.07. Okay, so shifting gears, we'll now go through the water and the wastewater systems here. And just like the electric, we did have to make a few assumptions when putting this together. So a few years ago, the board approved a 5-year structure to achieve uniform rates across all water systems that we have. And so we're still operating under that that plan and plan to get there in 2024. And the median rate increase is 4.2%. And this is based on our cost of service analysis, but at the end here, I'll show you the actual impact to each of the different water districts. Having said that, we are getting hit with more WASDOT fish passage projects, the culvert replacements, and those were not factored into our cost of service. So we're probably going to need to reach out to FCS Group in 22 and just ask them to give us a quick update. By including these additional costs to make sure that we're on the right trajectory and path. On the wastewater side, it's a pretty basic assumption. They're such small drain fields that we just use the same customer account that we have right now, and the average rate increase will be 5.9% through 24, which has already been approved by the board. So on the revenue side for water, there is an increase in revenue next year, primarily driven from our rate increase. But the big deal next year for water is we have a $3 million capital fund transfer. And then Tom was able to procure a public works board loan. And it looks like the estimated rate on that is going to be about 0.75%. So a phenomenal rate. And it's going to be helpful because this next year he's got a pretty heavy heavy year on the capital side. And so with the transfer and the loan, his revenue projection will be about 3 times what it is this year, from 5.1 to 14.6 million. And on the expense side, it's all pretty much the same until you get down to the debt. And the capital, obviously, when you add $6.6 million, your debt service is going to increase substantially. So his will go from about $678,000 to $1.1 million on the debt service. And this was factored into the cost of service analysis to make that payment. And then on the capital side, he's going from about $4 to $9 million next year for the water system. Wastewater, only change here is a capital transfer of $75,000, and that's going to be for a project, I believe, in Sunshine Acres for a lift station. And then on the wastewater side, again, all pretty much the same on the expense side except for that capital piece, which is for that Sunshine Acres project. And then, Ruth, I think it's over to you for the capital piece.
That's great. Thanks, Sean. Okay, here we have Waters Capital for 2022. And Tom was nice enough to write me up some summaries for his more notable projects. First up, Carlsberg. The district is partnering with the county on both the new source and new transmission line projects, which are for the development of the new Carlsberg well site and expansion of the water service area to the entire urban growth area. The county has already drilled the well and is working with the district on acquiring a water right. The water right process itself has been going on for several years, and thus the projects have been carrying over. The scope of the work for the combined budget of $560,000 is for water system plan amendments, preliminary engineering, permitting, and bid document preparation. Next, we have the Clallam Bay CQ infrastructure upgrade. This project is for replacing aging water mains and reservoirs. The planning and engineering started last year, and the bid process is planned to start at the beginning of 22. The $6.4 million budget is for the construction to replace those water mains. And this project is being funded by Water's new $6.6 million low-interest loan from the Public Work Board that the district was awarded this year. Next, we have the FAST emergency generators. The FAST booster pump station serves the Mount Pleasant Estates neighborhood and the Gales Addition water system. Previous plans had envisioned building a reservoir to provide emergency standby storage. The customers served by FAST requested that the district instead install an emergency generator, as it was more cost-effective than a reservoir. The budget here will cover design, permitting, and construction costs. Next, Water is budgeting for the procurement of a new service truck for the water treatment plant operator and a vac trailer for the field crews. Next, we have the Holler Well Restoration Project, which is intended to increase the water supply capacity of the Evergreen water system. There is an existing well, but it has not been used, and the project will restore the well, conduct a water treatment study, and prepare a preliminary engineering report. Next, we have the Mount Angeles Relocate Lower Pump Station project. The existing pump station is in a geologic hazard zone and needs to be moved to a more stable location. A new site has been identified, which is owned by the City of PA. The preliminary engineering has been completed, and the district has been working with the city on acquiring that site. This project has carried over for several years, while negotiations with the city on the Morse Creek line have been delayed. The 22 budget will cover the bid document preparation and construction. Lastly, acquired property for a new Evergreen R3 reservoir. This project is to acquire a site on Bell Hill for a new larger reservoir to service the middle and lower pressure zones of the Evergreen water system. The City of SWIM has annexed areas within these zones and is requiring the district to increase the reliability of the fire flow and emergency standby storage system. And then we have sewer, and the big project for sewer is the lower lift station for Sunshine One, and it's a project they were unable to complete this year. Okay, on to debt. Like with electric, the table at top shows the 2022 debt payment broken down by principal and interest for a total of $1 million. The graph at the bottom shows all of Water's debt service payments through term, including an estimate for the new Public Works Board loan. And so including that new loan, Water's total outstanding debt is $12.7 million. And then sewer has one loan. They borrowed monies from the water system, $68,000 to be exact. And that was to help finance the upper lift station in Sunshine 1.
Okay, thanks, Ruth. So here's the summary, just like we did for the electric system. So for water, next year their revenue is about 14.6 versus their expenses about 13.9. So their net change in operating reserves will be about $616,000, which will leave them with about $1.2 million next year, which is approximately 150 days cash on hand. On the wastewater side, revenue is about $151,000 versus expenses of also $151,000, basically a break even for the wastewater system next year at $68,000. And then this is the slide I was referring to earlier. It shows the breakdown by each water system. We're in 22, which is the one where it says 75-66 above the blue bar here. So these systems all right here, these are the dollar impacts based on a customer consuming 700 cubic feet of water per month. And then Panoramic Heights and Island View, we'll see larger increases until we get to 2024, which will get to rate parity among all the water systems. So that's the plan that's been in place since, I believe, 2018 is when we adopted that, and we're moving forward with that program. Finally, just an overall system summary here. This has electric, water, and sewer all combined on one sheet. And this is the format of the budget that we'll bring to you either in late November or the first meeting in December. And we'll be asking the board to authorize the adoption of the budget for 2022. And with that, I guess I'll open it up to questions for Ruth and I if there are any.
Any questions or discussion? This is kind of a preliminary, but we can take pot shots at it. Well, I guess not. So,
all right.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for your time. I appreciate it.
Bruce and Sean, thank you. To be continued. I would propose about a 5-minute break here, and let's come back at 2:57, how's that? Okay, I think everybody's back, so let's move on to our next item, which is BPA post-2028 contract discussions. This would be based on the presentation by Bonneville and PPC's meetings. Any items of interest?
Well, I attended it. It was another BPA staff fire hose treatment on a whole lot of details about residential energy credits and carbon options and a few other bits and pieces. I probably got more to say about it as it relates. WAPAG was making some pretty good observations and comments during that meeting, Ryan, and his name escapes me, another one of the WAPAG folks. Oh, Russ Snyder. But I'll cover more of that in detail when I talk about WAPAG during my commissioner comments.
Yeah, I think during the carbon discussions, it was kind of ironic to me that Bonneville was taking the position they couldn't carve out their zero carbon resources and put those in the contract and make a commitment to address CETA that way. But they are doing that for California, so it seemed to be a contradiction there.
And they used to do it here, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't quite understand that. They were saying they could not identify project-by-project power, but they, like you say, they've done it a couple of times in the past.
Right.
Anything on that, Rick?
No, I think that was a good summary.
Okay, our next item is Resolution 2213-21, confirming the appointment of Sean Worthington as general manager. Now, this was put in the packet. We're not going to vote on it today. We'll vote on it next meeting. And you'll notice that the compensation line has been left blank. We're still in negotiations on that. So we're just racking this up for action next meeting. All right, correspondence communication, Forks Community Service. Who has that one? Is that you, Doug?
Yeah, Nicole's in a conference today, so she handed me something and asked me to read it for her. It's basically water bottles for Forks Middle School. Just a couple of paragraphs I'll read. A few weeks ago, Nicole, communications manager, saw a post on social media that the Forks Forum had shared. It was a call to the community for donations to fund purchasing water bottles for the Forks Middle School students. The school was reopened for the school year, and due to COVID-19, they had to seal off the students' water fountains so there would not be a source to spread the virus. As such, the students needed accommodations with water bottles that could be safely filled. Nicole saw the announcement and realized an opportunity for the PUD to give back to the West End community, an opportunity that doesn't come along very often. So Nicole ordered these water bottles. I think she said it was like 300 of the water bottles. It has the school's logo on it, and it has a PUD on the other side with some information about our website and all. So it was a community effort out west that Nicole jumped on and took care of, and they appreciate it very much. So
great, good.
For Nicole getting on that.
Yeah, you gotta get their PUD logo before those kids. That's good. Okay, that's all you had, Doug? All right, our next item is commissioner reports. Jim, you want to lead it off? You sound like you've got something.
In addition to the, like we said, the
BPA PPC meeting on 2028. I attended the WAPAG meeting. Talked about several things, energy efficiency, dive, so forth. But I think for the purpose of this discussion, I think the most relevant thing is they got into discussion, Ryan, with the what he calls process concerns with the 2028 process. And I thought that was actually quite a very good observation, because it what he's seeing and some of the other folks, that members of WAPAG commissioners and some of the ones other commissioners I've talked to as well, we feel like we're just sort of BPA just marching through one briefing after another, like we're all supposed to just, you know, follow right along with it and everything's fine. And so what WAPAG is proposing is sort of a little bit of a reset, because BPA was going to issue a concept plan shortly, like in a month. And so we, WAPAG and members felt like that is rushing things. We're sort of already, they're already kind of packaging things down, and we really, the PUDs and the other members, haven't really had a cross-fertilization kind of discussion. And so he's going to suggest to BPA some process corrections and so forth. And they basically cover three areas, is that, and they have to do with system size and allocation, capacity, non-federal resource integration. And then one other that I was reminded at the end of the meeting, there was some slides that we didn't have time to get to about BPA's finances and cost and so forth. And that reminded me of some other conversations we've had in WAPAG and other with other commissioners as well around the state, that we haven't, you know, we really haven't talked about the cost of the system, the hydro system itself. BPA has been kind of playing the whack-a-mole thing where they say, oh, we're going to talk about in the IRP process, and you go to the IRP process, oh, we're going to talk about that with the Northwest Power and Conservation Council or something. And so it's sort of a circular kind of chasing the tail around on this thing. So that the issue of cost, the cost of the hydro system, the cost of the hydro assets, and the nuke or anything else that's a, you know, a cost driver for BPA is also either going to be embedded in the three bullets that I just mentioned or a fourth bullet. So and Ryan mentioned that was a concern by other members as well. So anyway, that's what I have to say about the WAPAG meeting.
Rick?
I would characterize the BPA meetings a little different than Jim. It was my understanding that because of a lot of new commissioners and a lot of new folks that are not familiar with the power system, that Bonneville provided these presentations for the last month and a half or 2 months as a background education to get everybody on the same page. And therefore, it was like a water hose if you didn't have the background behind you. But I would compliment Bonneville on at least trying to get everybody on the same page. And I think they were well worthwhile, and I'm glad that Bonneville did them. Bonneville did also outline three different carbon options, which I really appreciate also. At least Bonneville's starting to think about it. I guess there were six options. I'm sorry, I said three, but there were six. The sixth option I have a real problem with, deeming the slice product to be non-emitting, and that means any carbon that Bonneville does produce would go to the full requirements and block customers. And I pushed back on this pretty hard and said, well, if you're going to have an option like that, why not have an option that deems the full requirements customers and the block customers to get carbon free? And my logic being that if you're a slice customer, you have a real-time desk and a pre-scheduled desk. Therefore, if Bonneville hands you some carbon and you don't want it, you can turn around and sell it. Well, if you're a full requirements customer, you don't have that optionality. So I thought that that was really ill-conceived, the option six. The good news is that Bonneville has said that they will create RECs for all their hydro generation. I think that's a good idea. The WAPAG meeting was definitely a good meeting. They did talk about all the meetings that Bonneville had been going through, and it was good to hear other people's perspective on it. The other thing I thought was interesting, Grant County has prohibited any solar or wind generation in their county. I thought that, I'm not sure exactly if that's a preemptive strike to make sure that people in Seattle, you know, which are really advocating for a lot of solar and wind, which would be located in the eastern part of the state, and Grant County is seeing that and they don't want it there. I'm not sure exactly. They didn't really say why they had done that, but I thought that that was interesting.
Rick, where did you see that?
Go ahead.
Where did you hear? Was that in the WAPAG meeting?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, the guy leading the WAPAG was from Grant County. I can't recall his name, but he threw that out there as a kind of an aside, and it kind of pricked my interest because I thought that was kind of an interesting.
Well, going back a few years, there was strong public opposition to Franklin, Benton, and Grant, because they felt like that they were getting all these wind farms and solar farms and all that, but they weren't getting any benefit from it. There's very few jobs associated with that, and all the power goes to the west side. So they were venting their wrath about that.
Yeah, I can understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, I don't. That's kind of – I wouldn't lay that on those farmers that are making money off those wind turbines on their farms and making their farming prospects bearable. It all sounds kind of, you know, hyperbole, frankly, because the numbers just don't make sense in terms of saying you don't want to do it, and there's all these people opposed to it.
The last thing I wanted to share with you, I got out of clearing up, and I thought this was really interesting. There is an organization that's working with Google. They're called Nest Renew Basic, and it helps customers shift their heating and cooling electricity usage to times when energy is cleaner. It matches estimated fossil fuel electricity usage with renewable energy credits from U.S. wind and solar projects. But basically, it gives the users a snapshot of the grid's electricity on a scale from a less clean to very clean, and it allows the customer to potentially set up their thermostat so that if there's a lot of thermal generation on the system and they don't want thermal generation, they can program their thermostat to turn off. Which I think is really interesting. And I was thinking that a program like that for us or other utilities to do some peak shaving might be an interesting thing for us to look into, where if we were to perhaps give any customer that has one of those thermostats and giving us the right to turn off their electric heat for 15, 20, 30 minutes to shave the peak and therefore lower our overall cost, that we could share that cost right with the customer. Interesting technologies coming out these days, and some stuff I would have never have thought about with respect to demand response. Thank you.
Yeah, years ago in the Houston area, they put those things on air conditioners, and I guess back then there were heat pumps, and it would just shut them down for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, which in that climate, it worked. But you're right, it is, a peak shaving strategy.
Well, you can do the same thing with batteries, and particularly all these EVs are going to start showing up here, particularly with all the pickup trucks that people are going to want to buy. Yeah. So that technology can be integrated into that same concept as well.
Yeah, good thought, Jim.
Okay. I'm kind of hesitant to talk about this, but don't tell Scott Sims, but there's two representatives from Energy Northwest go to the PPC meetings, and as chairman of that executive board, I get reports back on that. A recent thing that came up, and you guys may have heard about this, but the you know, the state of Oregon and others are going to Judge Simon for an injunction to increase spill on the Columbia system. Supposedly the impact of that would be up to hundreds of millions of dollars on Bonneville, which of course we'd see that in our rates. And so PPC is putting together a legal friend of the court or whatever to help challenge that. And so they're asking members of PPC to pony up. Initially, they said $250,000, but they're, the lady who's, and I can't remember her name right offhand, the lady who's their attorney said she thinks that's way too little. It may be double that. So there will be assessments coming for members of PPC. We also had a meeting of the Resource Adequacy Task Force at Energy Northwest. We've kind of revised our charter to expand our purview over that topic. Just to explain, the task force doesn't make decisions and we don't hold public meetings and so on, but we are, it's a more or less a discussion attended by Energy Northwest staff, and then they can take that back and report out to the e-board and to their management. The topics were basically on grant, the SMR program with Grant. You know, Grant has signed memos of understanding with both X-Energy and with NuScale. And so we're kind of waiting with bated breath to see which way they go with that. They also, a new wrinkle came up. We always, we've been, Energy Northwest has been pushing the use of Site 1, which is right next to Columbia Generating Station. There was a partially completed nuclear plant there, which has been mostly dismantled now, but it is licensed for nuclear activity, so that would smooth the site licensing for that, for an SMR. But Grant has come back and decided, well, we're going to look at putting that in Grant County because we want the tax base and we want the jobs associated with that. So that's kind of up in the air as well. It could extend the project out. And additionally, in order to meet, you know, there's about $2 billion from the Department of Energy for starting up an SMR by 2027. But in order to keep that schedule, you would have to order long delivery items, reactor vessels, and so on in 2024. Well, Grant doesn't want to do that. So, and they're kind of characterizing the $2 billion as risk management. $2 billion is a little more than risk management to me, but that's the position they're taking. Anyway, we're working that issue with them, and we'll just see how it goes. I guess that's all I had. Staff reports. Doug, do we have any?
None today, Will.
Okay, good. Board action items. We talked about the updating the Carlsbad water system, a presentation to the board.
Right.
And I believe Tom committed to do an outreach to LUD pioneers to assure them that their rights are being protected.
Yes, and then there was some question about a pre-agenda verbiage, which I'll take a look at and correct if need be.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
Okay, Sean, we're back to comments from the public.
Nothing in the chat, Will, but if anybody from the public would like to make a comment, please give me your name now. Hearing none, Will.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we're going to recess our meeting now and go into executive session. Executive session, commissioners will hold the session to review the performance of a public employee and evaluate the qualifications of an applicant for public employment pursuant to RCW 42.30.110 sections 1G, and specifically as to current district CFO Sean Worthington as the general manager. And let's start out for at about 45 minutes for that. And who can keep time for us? Is that T or Sean?
I can do that.
Okay. Well, notify us when we approach the end of the 45 minutes.
Okie dokie.
Okay, Sean, let's take everybody out with the exception of the commissioners. Give you a while to get people back in.
All right, looks like everybody's back in now, Will.
Okay, good. Okay, during the executive session, there was a range of opinions. We did not reach an agreement on compensation or benefits package, which we could not have done in executive session in any case, but we're going to continue that in the next public session of the commission. So we'll see how that goes. Did I leave anything out, Brian or Don?
Nope.
Okay, good. All right. No, I'm back on. I figured it out. Sorry. It just... Okay. Do we have any other business to discuss or anything else? Questions, comments?
Nothing from us, Will.
Okay. Well, if not, we stand adjourned. Thanks for participating.